now with the latest from the world of technology. This is the Tech Guide Podcast with Stephen Fenwick.
I quite like the number of apps that are already available. Tech Guide. The iPad 2 still beats just about everything on the market. The new iPad has just kicked away even further. Tech Guide. I quite enjoyed using it. Great design. The operating system worked hand in hand with the hardware as well.
Keeping you updated and educated. This is the Tech Guide Podcast.
This is obviously a hot selling device.
Tech Guide.
You know, we want them to be light. We want them to be portable. And this one's very fast with i7 and i5 processors.
Now, from the studios of techguide.com.au, Stephen Fenwick.
Hello and welcome. This is episode 21 of the Tech Guide Podcast. My lucky number, it is 21. It's great to have your company. Thanks for listening and thanks for downloading. I'm Stephen Fenwick and I'm editor of techguide.com.au. This week we've got a packed show and we'll start off by taking a look at digital radios crossing the 1 million mark in Australia. And check out LG's partnership with Activision for Call of Duty Black Ops 2. Can't wait for that to come out. Plus, we'll go through the new road rules around mobile phone use in your car and see just how 20th Century Fox turns 2D movies into 3D movies. In our reviews, I'll give you my thoughts on the new iPad Mini. I've been using it a little while now. We'll also check out Sony's new high-end floor-standing speakers and a brand new app. It is cup time for those once a year and inexperienced punters who want to make it a little bit easier to place their bets. And we'll finish all of that off with the Tech Guide Help Desk. And it's all brought to you by our good friends at Netgear, Australia's number one brand of home Wi-Fi products. A packed show this week, so let's hop right in. Well, digital radios continue to be embraced by Australian listeners. Latest figures from GfK Marketing shows that in the third quarter, that's the quarter between July and September, there were more than 94,000 digital radios, 94,655 to be precise. But why that's significant is because it has brought the total number of digital radios sold here in Australia to over 1 million. That's taken us up to 1,002,966. And that is 1 million since the August 2009 launch of digital radio. So pretty good news. In just over 3 years, more than a million units sold in the country. Now, the third quarter is pretty significant. The reason for the higher figures in that particular quarter is the fact that that quarter was the same quarter we had Father's Day. That's believed to have really added to those higher sales. With Christmas around the corner too, I think Q4 is going to be pretty healthy as well. But according to the latest survey results too, there are 1.336 million people listening to digital radio every week across the five state capitals. Another interesting fact too that was pointed out was the TSL, which is short for time spent listening to digital radio via a digital radio DAB Plus device, is now 12 hours, which is actually double the TSL, time spent listening to radio via the internet. So significant inroads being made by digital radio. I think everyone will agree that once they've heard digital radio, it's very hard to go back to your normal AM, FM device, your radio. Now, digital radio has also included an FM radio. Of particular benefit is hearing AM radio so clearly through the digital radio devices. And we'll soon... We are seeing more and more of these devices in the market. There are now more than 140 different types of digital radio products on sale across Australia in more than 1,000 retail outlets. Now, these are not, some of them are just straight out radio, some of them are dock systems. So there's plenty of variety for listeners out there. But digital radio, we like digital radio. By those figures, they demonstrate that quite dramatically. So good news for digital radio. And if you're thinking of buying a digital radio, it would make a great gift this Christmas. I've reviewed plenty of digital radios on Tech Guide. Feel free to head over there and have a search for those reviews. And you can read the the full report about the digital radio rising above 1 million on techguide.com.au.
This is Tech Guide with Stephen Fenwick.
Now, we here at the Tech Guide offices, Tech Guide HQ, are very much looking forward to Black Ops 2. And by we, I mean me. I'm a big Call of Duty player. So it was with great interest that I saw earlier last week that LG have formed a partnership with Activision, the company that is publishing the Black Ops 2, Call of Duty Black Ops 2, the Treyarch game here in Australia and around the world. Now, what the partnership involves is LG offering or showcasing their new IPS7 monitor, which is a perfect companion to Call of Duty Black Ops 2, whether it's being played on a computer, on a console. It does showcase the quality of gaming. Now, let's face it, anyone who's played Call of Duty or any of the modern action games on a console, no, it's a truly cinematic experience, both visually and audio as well. It's a surround sound experience as well as being a lot of eye candy, a lot of really cinematic scenes, which is the reason why LG decided to partner with Activision in this case, because they are treating, they want people to believe that gaming to them, to LG, is just as important as people viewing movies. Now, so many people are playing games. Average age of a game is now in the 30s, so it's not just a teenage kid's pastime. It is very much enjoyed by not only individuals who like games like Black Ops 2, but also by families. So hence the reason why LG have put a lot of focus on these new LED monitors. They're full HD monitors, the IPS 7 series, 1920 by 1080, that's full HD, LED, available in 23-inch and 27-inch sizes. Now, they've got a few features here that suit gaming, including smooth color change. So that means it can support fast-moving images like action movies and games and give you less eye strain, because let's face it, you're going to be playing Black Ops 2 for extended periods of time, and the less eye strain you get, the better. So the LG monitors really come into play right there. The IPS 7 monitors have a HDMI input, so you can connect other devices like gaming console, a computer, Blu-ray player, and even a home theater system. They'll be available. They're available now, the monitors, but the game isn't available until November 13. Oh, less than a week and a half away, so it's just around the corner. But the LG IPS 7 monitors available in 23-inch. That's $299 for the 23-inch and $599 for the 27-inch model. If you're serious about your gaming, you should be serious about your monitor as well. So check out my story at techguide.com.au. Now, one of the biggest topics of discussion over the past week has to be the new road rules introduced in New South Wales and the ACT regarding mobile phone usage in your car. These rules went into effect on the 1st of November, and there are a lot of people who were a little bit confused about what you can and can't do with your mobile phone. There was talk of mounts and Bluetooth and what you're allowed to touch it or you're not allowed to touch it. Well, I'm here to explain the rules quite clearly. Now, the basics of these: if you want to touch your phone while you're driving, it needs to be mounted on your windscreen or on your dashboard. If you don't have it in a windscreen or dashboard mount, you cannot touch your phone. They're the basics. Now, even if it is not in a mount, and even if you're stopped at the traffic lights, and you know you may even be in traffic and not moving, you are still not allowed, if it's not in a mount, if it's just down in your lap or on the console somewhere, you are still not allowed to touch that phone. If you do, you're breaking the law. So don't forget checking emails, updating, sending a Facebook status, tweeting. You cannot touch that phone. And even in the stand, that doesn't give everyone just free rein to touch their phone whenever they want. Even in the mobile, in the mount on the windscreen, the only things you can do to touch your phone, the only reasons you have to touch your phone in the mount is to make or answer a call, to adjust music if you've been using it as your audio in your car, and if you're using it as a GPS system. So don't think that if you've got your mobile phone mounted on a windscreen that you can write messages and tweet and do all those kinds of things. Wrong. That's too distracting. You can't do it. Now, a lot of people say, well, what's the difference between having your phone in a windscreen in a mount or down in your lap? If you can make and answer calls when it's down in your lap. Well, the reason they wanted the stand on the windscreen is because they wanted to keep your eyes at road level. Now, if you've got your phone in your lap and you're making and answering calls, and you're doing those sort of things, you'll no doubt be looking down at your phone, away from the road, down towards your lap, which is quite dangerous considering you should have your eyes on the road. So that's the reason why the mounts have come in for people to, if they do need to touch the phone, at least that it's at road level, at eye level, so that you're kind of not taking your eyes off the road. Now, if you don't want to mount, say you've got Bluetooth connectivity in your car. I know my car, I connect my car, the phone automatically links up to my car's Bluetooth system, and I can make an answer, I can answer calls, make calls using the controls on my steering wheel. So I literally do not need to touch my phone in my car to make and receive calls. So I do have a mount in my car, but I technically don't need it because if I can operate my phone hands-free, I don't need a mount. That's another thing that a lot of people didn't understand. So if you're happy with your existing Bluetooth system, keep answering your phone through that Bluetooth system. You might even have a GPS that supports Bluetooth hands-free kit. A lot of the GPS systems from TomTom, Navman, they all support hands-free operation of your phone. So you can sync your phone to that device as well if you're looking for a solution. Now these road rules, new rules have come into practice. So yeah, that's just a run through of these new road rules. Well worth abiding by them if you live in New South Wales. And there are similar rules in other states. And even if you're listening to this podcast outside of New South Wales, even if you're listening to this podcast in another country, it is good practice not to be looking at your phone, touching your phone while you're driving. It can be very dangerous. You take your eyes off the road, even for a couple of seconds. If you're traveling at 60, 80, 100 kilometres an hour, you could travel 200 metres without your eyes on the road, and you may injure yourself, you may injure other people, and God forbid, maybe kill someone if you're not paying attention to the road. So keep your eyes on the road, keep your hands off your phone. If you don't, you're going to risk a fine. It's a $297 fine or 3 points off your license. Now, I don't know about you, I'd rather not touch the phone and save the money and save my points. Full report at techguide.com.au if you want to run through those rules, but let's stay safe out there, people.
Keeping you updated and educated. This is Tech Guide with Stephen Fenwick.
Now, I recently returned from Los Angeles. I was there a couple of weeks ago as a guest of 20th Century Fox, and they had an interesting assignment. They wanted someone who, obviously a tech journalist like myself, to go over there and understand the process that the studio has introduced in converting 2D films to 3D. A fascinating assignment this was. And the film that they had in mind was Will Smith's film I, Robot. This was their guinea pig, if you like, to use this technology that was developed in conjunction with JVC Kenwood, which takes a 2D film and converts it to 3D. Now, a lot of studios out there are doing this already. Fox decided for themselves, well, you know what? We can only make so many 3D films per year, out there and release them in cinemas. Well, with all this hardware out there, hardware like 3D TVs, 3D Blu-ray players, PlayStation 3s, they can all play 3D films, 3D Blu-rays. There was so much consumer demand for more content, more live action content, not more animated 3D content, more live action content. So 20th Century Fox asked the question, how can we take our back catalog, some of our classic films, and create 3D versions of them? Now, this is the method they use, this method in conjunction with JVC Kenwood, who they've come together and created some remarkable technology that takes a 2D film and converts it to 3D. Now, what do you need for a 3D film? You need two images, one for the left eye, one for the right eye. Now, anyone who knows 3D TV 101 is that when you're watching a 3D TV with active glasses, the active glasses are actually shutters that open and close in time with the TV. They're synced wirelessly to the TV with infrared, and the shutters open and close so that you're getting a left eye, right eye image hundreds of times a second, which tricks your brain into seeing into what you think is 3D. Now, if you were to make it, convert a 2D film to 3D, you need to actually make that extra image. And what Fox decided to do was to create a right eye image from the left eye. So the 2D film that exists is their left eye image. So they decided they create a right eye image. So to do that means that the film needs to be what they call, you need to go through and create what they call a depth script. And what that entails is someone sitting down and looking at the film and saying, right, these objects need to be in the foreground, these need to be in the background, these can move through the scene, and so on. So once that is done, then the technology gets to work. And what it does, it uses a technique called rotoscoping. So it can cut out objects, define objects, and give them depth in the scene. And once that's done, it's most of it is automated, but then obviously it needs to be manually touched up, manually improved, and then shifted. So once those images are identified, the right eye image needs to be shifted away from the left so that you're creating that second image. Now, when it is shifted, there's data that needs to be created. There's information that's missing. So this technology then goes in and paints that missing information. Maybe the wall, a line on the screen, some kind of image on the screen that needs to be filled in artificially for that second image. Now, that is also done using the technology, automated using the technology, but it's not perfect. So that's why someone has to go through frame by frame and pick up the flaws. I've put some images on Tech Guide of my story, and you see some distortion in some of the scenes that has to be done, go back and be touched up so that distortion is taken away. But that's not the end of the process. Now, once you've done that, you don't want to end up, and this has been the case with some of the pretty poorly translated 2D to 3D films, is that you end up with what looks like a series of cardboard cutouts on a screen. You know, they look 3D. One looks deeper and further away than the other. But as I said, a lot of them look like cardboard cutouts. So there's a very important last process that's carried out called embossing. Now, what this involves is giving the characters, the objects, and the things in the scenes volume. So rather than Will Smith in iRobot being a flat surface, he's actually given volume. His face curves, his body curves, as if he would be seen in real life. And this is what completes the picture. And I've seen the finished result. It's available now in stores, as a matter of fact, iRobot in 3D on Blu-ray, and the results are remarkable. So this was a great test bed for Fox to try out this technique. They've had great success. As I said, I've seen the film. Looks like it was shot in 3D. It's remarkable how advanced it looks and how good it looks in 3D. A film really suitable for 3D, a great sci-fi film directed by Australian Alex Proyas. So worth checking out. But you can imagine Fox, of course, have got a few other films in mind. They won't tell me which, but I've got a few on my wish list from the Fox library. Imagine the Alien films all in 3D. Or imagine Die Hard, Minority Report. These are all Fox films. Braveheart, starring Mel Gibson. Imagine those battle scenes in 3D. Well, we'll have to wait and see, but you will see now iRobot in 3D on Blu-ray, which was converted from 2D to 3D using this remarkable technology. I've got a full report up on Tech Guide, including some illustrations and some images on how it was done. Worth checking out at techguide.com.au.
Tech Guide now. A Tech Guide review with Stephen Fenwick.
Well, Apple's latest creation, the iPad Mini, was released last Friday, November the 2nd. And it was, before I get into the product, there was about launch day, there was a bit of, it was noted that the crowds were a lot smaller than we've seen in the past. For example, the iPhone 5 lines were way bigger than what we saw for the iPad Mini. I was down at the Apple store in George Street in Sydney. And there was the line went just around up George Street, a little bit up King Street would have been only about 200 people in the line. And a lot of people were thinking, oh, well, that's it. The party's over. No one loves Apple anymore. It's a little bit of Apple fatigue. Everyone was coming up with their theories why the lines were smaller. Oh, here's my little theory. The devices available on that day, the iPad Mini and the fourth generation iPad, the only devices available, the versions of those products were only Wi-Fi versions available. The 4G, the highly anticipated 4G versions, won't be available till mid to late November. That is, I think, one of the reasons why there were less people in line. Another reason is the ease in which people can now order their products, pre-order their products, and have them delivered to their door the day of release rather than having to camp out overnight and wait for hours on that first day to get their hands on it. But I think another reason, too, is that there's still a little bit of hangover from the iPhone 5, which wasn't even released. I think it was released 5 weeks ago. So that I don't think anyone would be expecting huge lines the same sort of lines that we had for the iPhone 5. That was a bit of a different kind of proposition. And, you know, people saying, oh, Apple's line only went back a block from the storefront. How that would be bad, I don't know. Many companies would kill for their lines of their new products only to go back one block from the front door of their stores. But anyway, enough about the opening day. Let's talk about the product. Now, the iPad Mini, it's not called Mini for nothing, of course. It's got a 7.9-inch screen. And I've been using it for about a couple of weeks now, and I have to say I tend to be – I find myself using the Mini a lot more than my regular-sized iPad. I just like the size of this product. I think a barrier to purchase for a lot of people when it comes to the iPad was the size. The 9.7-inch screen, it's pretty large. It's a bit of a commitment to carry that around. You need a bag. It's not something you can just fit in your pocket. And I think the reason that a lot of people, they didn't buy it, they thought, no, it's too big. Well, I think the iPad Mini is the just right solution. I'm calling it the Goldilocks iPad. It's not too big. It's not too small. It's just right. So for a lot of people who may have been holding off buying an iPad, I think the Mini may just be the solution. And the beauty of this size is that you can grip it in one hand quite easily. So if you want to use it as an e-reader, the Kindle, it's about the same size as a Kindle, slightly wider than the Google Nexus 7, the Kindle Fire, which isn't out here in Australia, but it's roughly the same size. The screen is actually slightly bigger on the iPad Mini, 7.9 inches. And the great news is the fact that it's got a 7.9 inch screen for a reason. So that you can, and also the same resolution as the iPad 2, which is 1024 by 768. Now the reason for that, Apple very cleverly decided to include a screen that would not require apps to scale up or down, that they would fit perfectly on this screen. A smart move, I think. The App Store is probably one of the best features for any iOS product, including the iPad. So rest assured, any app that works on the full-sized 9.7-inch iPad works perfectly on the iPad Mini. But let's just go through the product. The screen, it's not a Retina display. A lot of people criticize Apple, thinking, well, we're a bit spoiled by the Retina display on our iPhones, on the larger iPad. I think a Retina display on this device would have priced it, I think, out of the market. People were grumbling that the price wasn't that good, what was a slightly higher than other similar-sized tablets. I disagree. I think it's pretty competitively priced, but I don't think a Retina display would have been the answer. I think because it's got the same resolution as the iPad 2, so that's 1024 by 768, but don't forget it's fitting that into 7.9-inch screen, those same number of pixels, hence the pixel density is quite high, so the screen does actually look quite sharp. It's not Retina quality, but it's not far off it. I think that the screen is high enough quality to enjoy all your apps and any of your movies, photos, whatever you want to see. It's still, in my opinion, pretty high quality on the iPad Mini. The battery life is incredible. It's one of the best features I found of the iPad Mini. It lasted for days. I mean, 2.5 days. And, you know, it's only the Wi-Fi model. I acknowledge that. The 4G model will probably burn the battery a little bit more, but still very, very, very impressive battery performance. Now, it's got under the hood, it's got an A5 processor, same processor as the iPad 2. So just from hearing all of those features, this isn't just a cut down iPad with cut down capabilities. Yes, it is smaller, but has the ability of the larger iPads. The iPad 2 hasn't quite got the speed of the fourth generation iPad, which does have an A6X processor in it now. But this surely is. It'd be not fair to describe this just as a shrunken down iPad. It is an iPad just in a smaller form factor that offers the same app performance and the same kind of feel, look and feel as the full sized iPad. Other improvements, you'll see the Lightning dock connector. It's got the small connector on the bottom, the same connector we saw introduced with the iPhone 5. And it also comes with its own range of smart covers. So the same smart covers that we saw with the larger iPad now have their own. There are some for the iPad Mini. And just like on the larger iPad, it also puts the device to sleep once you close the lid. But of my full review on techguide.com.au, I've also done a short video. So just check that out. It's up on Tech Guide right now. It's been up there for a few days now. The embargo lifted 2 days before the release. I had this before it went on sale. I was using it for a week before it went on sale. So it gave me the ability to write my review ahead of time and also record my video, which is up on my story. So if you want to read the full report of my iPad Mini review, you need to head over to techguide.com.au. Now, I love audio, and I love a good pair of speakers. And it's good to see that Sony has decided to return to the high-end audio market. And they're doing this with a new set of speakers, the ES series of speakers, which are said to have been the idea of the new CEO, Kaz Hirai. Years ago, Kaz Hirai was head of the PlayStation division. He's since taken over from the former chairman and CEO, Sir Howard Stringer. He took over back in February. And my info is that he was real behind Sony getting back into high-end audio, and the ES series speakers are the result of that. Now, these are floor-standing speakers. They're quite authoritative in terms of sound and size, and they're not cheap. They haven't given us a price, but you could rest assured that you're going to be talking in the thousands of dollars once the price is released in December. But just on the speakers themselves, they're handcrafted, excellent design. They use Japanese maple and English birchwood. These are materials that are known for not only for acoustic qualities, but they've also got the ability to absorb vibrations internally. So and vibrations are the enemy of any speaker. Any vibrations you can absorb, the more the better. And these materials allow you to do that. Inside, they've got aluminium cone woofers, flexible spiral-pressed paper cones as well in the mid-range, and fabric dome tweeters. So it covers the whole audio range. Now, the ES series is, apart from the handcrafted design and make and the materials used, there was a lot of work that went into it to recreate the lifelike sound from places like a concert hall. I think Sony actually went to a concert hall and made different audio measurements around the concert hall. They even did the same thing in a high-end digital cinema so they can get the audio readings to recreate that sound feel in your own home. The ES series speakers also have a system called the iArray on board, which includes three little tweeters at the top of the speaker. So it's one main soft dome tweeter and two smaller ones, so it can give you reproduce a higher frequency across the whole audio range. So, but these ES series speakers too can not only be enjoyed for two channel, but you can also add shelf speakers, a center speaker, and an active subwoofer if you want to create a real kick-ass surround sound system. Yes, I said kick-ass because I heard them and the surround sound was incredible. I was watching it on the Sony's 20, their 4K television, which is just this week been announced at $25,000. But the sound system through the their multi-channel receiver was excellent through the ES series. Also heard some music, and the music was really pristine sound. You could hear every instrument like they were playing there in the room. But the ES series, available in December, and as I said, pricing hasn't been announced yet. But be prepared if you and one thing I know about audiophiles, they're prepared to put their money down if they like something, a product like that. And if you can hear the quality of these speakers, you'll be willing to put down your hard-earned. But I've got a report on techguide.com.au. If you're into your audio, well worth checking out.
You're listening to Tech Guide with Stephen Fenwick.
Tech Guide is brought to you by Netgear. Now, do you want better Wi-Fi coverage around your home? We've all experienced those annoying Wi-Fi dead spots. And these days, with the number of mobile devices we're using at home, like tablets and smartphones, all these devices connecting to a home network, you need a solid Wi-Fi connection. It's more important than ever. Netgear now has a range of Wi-Fi extenders that will boost your existing wireless signal and improve your online experience anywhere in your home. Universal compatibility means you can keep all of your current wireless equipment, and CD-less installation makes setup easy on mobile devices. Netgear has a Wi-Fi extender to suit any size household, from the compact wall plug Wi-Fi booster for mobile up to the 4-port dual band Wi-Fi range extender, which is perfect if you want to stream HD video content and maximize your online home theater experience. So if you want to boost your Wi-Fi coverage and improve your online experience in every corner of your home, check out Netgear's Wi-Fi range extenders at netgear.com.au/boost my Wi-Fi. Well, it is Melbourne Cup time again. We're recording this on Monday night, which is the night before the Melbourne Cup. And there's been an app released, and this is not only useful for the Melbourne Cup, but it is handy that we can talk about it around this time of year because there's a lot of once-a-year punters out there. But this is an app that can be used all year round. If you're interested in going to the races, you're not used to putting on your bets, you're a little bit intimidated going to the window and asking to place your bets, not sure of what to do, then you need to get hold of the new iPhone app called Horse Betting Made Easy. And it does live up to its name. Horse Betting Made Easy does just that. Now, this app was how I found out about this app, I got an email from a young lady named Rebecca Harvey up on the Gold Coast who, with her friend Naomi, decided to create an app because they both said they love glamming up for the races but felt a little bit they found placing a bet a little difficult. So rather than they decided to go away and do something about that. And what they came up with was Horse Betting Made Easy. And what it does, it takes you step by step through the betting process. So you can start off with deciding on how many horses you want to bet for the race. You want to go have 1, 2, 3, 4, 4+. And then it allows you to choose the type of bet you want, whether it's a quinella, a trifecta, a double, and then lets you go through, then choose the course, choose the number of horses, so that the horse numbers. And by the end of this process, you end up with a small script which describes your bet in the exact betting parlance. So when you head to the betting window, all you need to do is read out the screen and you'll be placing your bet that you now fully understand and can afford, because you can determine the amount of money you want to bet on it, so you know exactly what you're spending using this app. Now, another part of this app which I find very attractive as well is the glossary section. Now, there's a lot of terms that are thrown around on the race course that people don't understand. And the beauty of the glossary in the app is that you can join the conversation, know exactly what other people are talking about, what the bookies are talking about trackside, by using the onboard glossary. A very handy app to have in your pocket. Cup day tomorrow. If you're listening to this after cup day and you're interested in going to the races and don't want to be intimidated by the betting system, then it's well worth your time to head to Horse Betting Made Easy. It's $1.99 on the App Store, only available for iPhone so far, but I'm sure it will get to Android devices eventually. So if you're going to have a bet with your head not over it, as they say, but if you need a bit of help, Horse Betting Made Easy app, $1.99 at the App Store.
Now, answering all your tech questions, the Tech Guide Help Desk.
Now, I'd love a dollar for every email and call I've had about Apple's new mapping system. Now, it hasn't been given the best of receptions, and if you want to have a look at the corporate structuring around Apple lately, Scott Forstall, the former iOS senior vice president, Apple have said he will no longer be with the company next year. It appears he may have taken the fall for the debacle, which was the Apple Map system, which was introduced with iOS 6. But what people have asked, because Apple Maps now, they are improving slightly. I use them from time to time, but the Google Maps system that was there since iOS 6 has been installed, if you've installed iOS 6, Google Maps has disappeared. And the question for the help desk this week is, how do I get Google Maps back again? Well, you can't download the app, but there is a way to use Google Maps again on your iPhone or on your iPad. And the way to do it is this. You need to access it through Safari, through the device's browser. So once you've done that, you type in an address. And if you want to bookmark that page, that maps page, you can then press the icon at the bottom of the screen to add to home screen. And what that option does, it adds the icon to your home screen. So rather than you having to keep going to Safari, navigating to Google Maps all the time, you've now got a shortcut on your desktop that once you click on that, you're in the Google mapping section of Safari, and it just simply lets you type in your address and where you want to go. It still gives you turn-by-turn directions, but it is the tried and trusted and tested Google Maps that are no longer a default app on the iPhone. So yes, you can use Google Maps. That's answered several readers' questions. You can still do it. Add it to home screen. Go to Safari, add to home screen, and you will have a Google Maps icon back on your screen. Boy, time flies. That's it for another week. If you want to read more about everything I've spoken about on this week's show, you can head over to techguide.com.au if you need any more information. And we also want to hear from you as well, and you can do that by getting in touch via email at info@techguide.com.au. You can also send us your help desk questions to the Tech Guide forum, and we may be reading that out right here on the show. And it was all thanks to Netgear, Australia's number one brand of home Wi-Fi gear for all your wireless needs. Thanks for listening. We'll be back again next week.